Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, like why, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. We have braved the elements. We've gotten out of the house to do this show for you, this podcast of public radio film goodness. And it's that time of year where we bring not one but two heavy hitters to the show, and they're together as well. So let's get the intros going.
It's called Inception.
Thanks. Yes, it's all in the timing. That means Brian Hartz is here, and his... Oh, hi, Brian.
Good morning.
Good
Hello.
Morning. Good afternoon.
Good whatever. Afternoon.
Whenever
good
you're
day.
Listening to this, that's all right.
You just saw the Truman Show, so...
Yes, right. And along with us here, his lovely wife, Monica.
Duh. You're not my supervisor. Duh. You're not my supervisor! Duh. You're not my supervisor! Ooh,
She's got a weapon! Drop it!
You're not my supervisor! Duh.
Bear claws, wrong. 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 Bear claws, wrong.
Duh. Who the hell drilled my box?
So we're just done with phrasing, right? That's not a thing anymore.
Duh.
Do you think that's wise?
This is so boring and forever taking.
Duh.
Jimmy, 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 Jimmy!
I'm not tasering you, so just...
Kill me!
Thank you. Duh.
She's so weird. Hey, will you choke me a little bit?
Monica Hartz is here.
Hello.
Welcome to your program of audio Dadaism.
Well, I say, if Bibi were here, she would have hers, and then the show would be over. No,
yes.
That's no. One day I might do I might just do a glossary of all of the intros and IDs and the stories behind them. So, but that's not
you've,
that's
you've,
not for
you've, you've heard that piece by Bonzo Dog Doodah Band called The Intro and the Outro, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So heavy.
And J. Arthur Rank on Gong.
How you guys doing?
Good. We survived the unplowed, unsalted city streets. So,
yes.
And highway.
Salty tone, I can hear.
Welcome
Very
to Indianapolis,
salty,
where we deal
actually.
With this kind of thing all the time. But today just didn't.
The question is, does one lose? It happens in New York. It happens in Chicago. Does one lose an election in Indy for not plowing certain streets?
I don't think so.
We'll guess see. We'll find out. Is it an election year?
I guess we'll find out. So,
no.
Oh, it's not an election?
No, next year.
No, we're in 19. Next year is 20. Next year's a big one.
Yeah, but the mayoral election's an off year, isn't it? Oh, well.
That's it.
That's not the topic of this conversation.
But that's not why we're here.
Yeah, that's not why we're here.
How many days were you snowed in?
I left. You were home
well, we
for
were
3 days.
Snowed in, just cold.
Just cold.
Right.
Just cold.
Frozen
yeah.
in.
I don't think I left between.
I was forced to go to campus
Tuesday
and attend classes
and
yesterday.
This morning, Friday. So
okay,
yeah. but
yeah.
you know, I work from home anyway, so
that's
my pretty
good.
Commute was not affected.
I have a coat that is fabulous enough that I feel like you could plop me down in the middle of Dr. Zhivago and I would be fine.
Well, Brian would like that.
He would.
You know, as long as I got to be doctor and not.
Well, yeah,
you know,
yeah. duh.
And not Rod Steiger.
That's my role, apparently.
All right.
I know. I've often people ask, "What are you?" And I would say, "Well, I'm the character actor gene." So you know, if Anthony Quinn and Rod Steiger had a kid, first off, that's a feat. That's a visual, and then second, no, it's not really.
Yeah, I'd take that career.
That's pretty good. Yeah. So while you guys were playing Dr. Zhivago back home, we were playing Zalman King's The Shining. But that's not here for now. So
okay.
not too bad. So we'll catch up on what we watched when we were snowed in, and there's a big movie moment that happened in the Hartz families, and we'll get to
yeah.
that in
oh,
a little
yeah.
bit. And then we're obviously, I asked Brian and Monica to be here, especially Brian, because of we have some music that we're going to be sharing some audio, just enough to, you know, get away with playing it on the radio or on podcast.
I'm just here for eye candy.
Thank
which
you.
Which is great for radio.
That's very nice of you to say. Oh, her. Got it. See, she looked at me when she said that, which is also great for radio. So, no, all the women in our lives, really good sports. But first, opening in theaters. Yes, we are in February, where it's a combination of, well, they got to put something out into the multiplexes, so they've been doing that. And then Oscar-nominated films that have been trickling down into places like Indianapolis. And finally opening this weekend is the Academy Award-nominated film Cold War. And this is up for foreign language film. It's got a pretty good shot there. And then also for directing for, pardon my Polish, Paweł Pawlicki, and cinematography, which looks great. It's black and white, gorgeous photography is not just for Roma anymore. Cold War should also be in that mix. But it's set in post-war Poland, which you have a guy and a girl, Wiktor and Zula, who fall in love, and they're artists, and they, if you're a fan of La La Land or the last, well, I guess any version of A Star Is Born, this is your art house version of that story, where careers don't quite peak at the same time, and then, of course, you have post-World War II Poland to deal with
mm-hmm.
that throws itself into the mix. So,
but if you make it black and white, it's prettier.
It is, and it works out that way with this. So anyway, it's a good, well-done, gorgeous-looking melodrama. And as I said, if you enjoyed the other titles mentioned, you might go check that out. And it's now finally in Indianapolis, so congratulations.
Awesome.
All right.
So that's really.
Are there any Oscar nominees that haven't hit this market yet?
Well, the shorts and I believe the shorts oh, yeah. and the will be making its run at everyone's favorite Northside Art House Theater with Bar and Real Butter. We know that place. But yeah, I'll have to check that. But I know this was a big one. That it was like it's about time it arrived here. So anyway, that is in theaters. Go check that out now. Shifting gears a little bit, I'll mention what's happening over at IU. IU Cinema, if you're listening, depending on when you're listening to this, 7 o'clock Friday night, the 2008 drama Summer Hours. Saturday, February 2nd at 4 o'clock, the 2018 drama Little Woods, followed by the 1980 documentary Demon Lover Diary at 7 o'clock. Sunday, February 3rd at 1 o'clock from 1970, Wanda, no fish involved. And then, sorry, and then at 4 o'clock, Sunday, February 3rd, Hook. Your thoughts on Mr. Williams' score? I need to revisit that, apparently. I was not a fan when it first came out. And the smart one, well, the other smart one, has been bugging me about wanting to watch that.
It's so good. And like and you brought up John Williams' score, and I mean, Brian could speak to that more.
Yeah, when you said Mr. Williams, I thought initially you meant Robin.
Robin?
Williams,
no, even...
No, I love Robin Williams in that movie. I think he does a really good job. I think he and, oh my gosh, the name.
Dustin Hoffman?
Yes, thank you. He and Dustin Hoffman work really, really well together.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids don't annoy me, which is always a really great thing
That's
when I'm
plus.
Watching a movie about kids. Like, the kid actors are good. And But yeah, the score is amazing, of course, because it involves flying, and Brian can tell you about John Williams and flying.
Nobody does flying music like John Williams. Really, you have a sequence where somebody's experiencing the joy of flying. Just get John Williams.
John? Yeah. Just call speed dial.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yes.
Other examples besides E.T.?
E.T. certainly. Harry Potter.
True.
Always, if you remember that one.
Ah, okay.
Or, there's his score to the pilot of Amazing Stories, The Mission. You remember that?
That's out on video now, isn't it?
I think
Amazing
it is.
Stories.
Yeah.
I remember watching
that.
Great
show.
It was fascinating because it was, I want to say, there was no Twilight Zone at that time. There was a reboot. I mean, there was a film, but there was, because it was really pushing because you had Spielberg and Burt Reynolds directed one and a lot of names.
Tim Burton.
And they were all fascinating. And I was like, wow, you're plunking out a lot of money for one-off episodes. So,
and I can't believe you didn't mention Superman.
Well, naturally. That's why you're here.
Right.
to remind me of the things,
because that might be the most, iconic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Flying music
absolutely.
That's pretty good.
If you can ignore the not so inspired lyrics as spoken by the late great Margot Kidder.
Right.
Can you read my mind?
Also, at IU Cinema, the film Reality at 7:00. And then Thursday, February 7th, Veteran at 7:00. So, anyway, those are happening over there at the Artcraft Theater in Franklin. February 7th, 7:30 p.m., The First Pitch Perfect. Have you seen any of those?
No,
I haven't seen any of them either.
How did you manage to avoid them?
I reviewed something else that week.
Okay.
That's probably a legit answer. And then we have enough musical theater students that I just thought, God, I think Lynn and I might have to actually sit down and watch one just to see what all the talk is about.
You've probably just absorbed a large part of it from osmosis being around musical theater kids.
Exactly. And I remember when we were doing Barn Rats many, many moons ago, and Lynn and I finally sat down and watched the first High School Musical.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we're like, oh, okay.
That's a thing.
That's all right.
Sure thing. Well, but the Pitch Perfect. I mean, they've got themselves a nice little franchise going, and it's a women-led enterprise. So,
yep.
More power to
them. That. February 8th and February 9th at the Artcraft Theater, 2 and 7:30 p.m., 35mm print, Casablanca.
Yay!
That's going to be fun. 15th and 16th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yep. February 22nd and 23rd, 2 and 7:30 p.m. Would have been perfect this week. John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yes, absolutely. It was colder than some parts of
Witch's
Elbow
this week. That's right. Yeah, we could do that. So that's a 35mm print as well. Music by John Carpenter. Your thoughts on Mr. Carpenter's work? I know he did a retouch of the latest Halloween. He did a little soundtrack variation.
He's underrated as a composer. Obviously not formally trained, but
he knows what he likes.
A ton of experience, and I've actually got one or two of his albums of just electronic stuff that he did independently, and it's a lot of fun to listen to.
Cool.
He's got a very definite sensibility that seems like it just sort of solidified in the early '80s, but it works for him, so it's pretty cool.
Sunday, February 24th at 2:00, Forrest Gump. And then March 1st and 2nd at the Artcraft Theater in Franklin, the Heartland Films Best of the Fest. So you can go check that out. Oh, and then March 8th and 9th, 2 and 7:30 p.m. on the big screen, 35mm print, My Man Godfrey.
Wow.
I have not seen
William Powell and Carol Lombard. So
I think I've seen that a long, long time ago.
So there you go. That is out. So you have to go check that. So new on DVD and Blu-ray, a little bit. I've been saying that this year, looking at the nominees in the acting categories, it wouldn't surprise me, although the voting demographics have changed, but it wouldn't surprise me there are four people in those categories that have not received one yet and have been around a while or received several nominations or both. And one of those, case in point, is Glenn Close in the drama The Wife. you know, this might be the Still Alice Award. It wins Best Actress, and nobody has seen it, although yeah. I did see that. And the wife, she is the wife of Jonathan Pryce, who gets a Pulitzer. And and it's just a long-running, seething boil until emotions are let out, and not in a shrill way. So beautifully underplayed by both of them.
I think as of this nomination, either Glenn Close will finally win one or hold the all-time record for most nominations without a win.
Really? Yeah, it's interesting.
So I just heard her on Wait, Don't Tell Me. Ah, she's talking about that,
and she handles it well. She's a really good. And she's also joked like I got a nomination for crying in a shower. I got a nomination for standing up. So, nice work if you can get it. Also on DVD and Blu-ray this week, the ongoing cinematic torment of Lucas Hedges, this time in Boy Erased, the film with Nicole Kidman and Russell Crowe, and it's a kid sent to the D-gang camp run by Joel Edgerton. I'm still waiting. I think Lucas Hedges and Timothée Chalamet have earned the right to star in a remake of Superbad. Just so they can have something light to work with.
Well, most likely. Yeah. Actually, speaking of NPR-related stuff, as I
Thank
suppose
you.
We do, there is another podcast, Radio Lab. I'm a big fan.
Yes.
Did a limited series in connection with that film about the real history of gay conversion therapy, including the true stories of some of the people involved in that film. It's really interesting, and you should check it out.
Look at that. He doesn't even work here. It's really smooth. Also on DVD and Blu-ray. Oh, this and I'm fascinated. I've liked both for different reasons. So I'm kind of on the camp where I didn't love it, but I respected it more and I liked it. But the current remake of Suspiria with music by Tom Wolke. The fact that he and Johnny Greenwood didn't get nominations in the score category is a bit of a shame, and it seems like it's a little backwards. But
I love Johnny Greenwood's work.
Have you seen the original Suspiria, the Dario Argento?
Okay, in fact, I just recently picked it up on Blu-ray. It is visually just mind-boggling.
Yep.
It's best if you don't think too hard about the plot.
Yes. Well, it's a dance academy in Germany that turns out to be Witch's Coven. It happens. So,
yeah, it does.
And, of course, it was Dario Argento and music by Goblin, of course. And
oh, my God. One of the great rock soundtracks of all time.
And one of the first ones. Well, that's not entirely true.
No. I mean, by that point, they'd already used Tubular Bells for The Exorcist, and although that's
one piece
somewhere Prague experimental,
right?
Where in the rock hierarchy that falls?
I was trying to say was it's a score as opposed to a collection of songs.
That's true.
Rock
that's
songs
true.
Made
yeah.
into that.
Yeah.
So the remake is Lucia Guadagnino, who did I Am Love, A Bigger Splash, also known as Megan McKinney Cooper's favorite director. She hates I Am Love. And I made her watch it. And it's with Dakota Johnson, Tilda Swinton. And Chloe Grace Moretz and Jessica Harper. My best definition of this is Dario Argento's Suspiria is Julie Andrews singing My Favorite Things. The remake of Suspiria is John Coltrane's My Favorite Things.
That sounds like a win either way.
Well, it's two completely different tellings of the same story.
Yeah.
The remake is 2.5 hours, and it covers a lot of ground as far as arts and ballet and body shaming and Nazi Germany and modern Germany. I mean, there's a lot of story going on here, and they're not afraid to throw stuff up against the wall and see what bends and sticks. So,
well, when you've got that much Tilda Swinton to go around, I mean, well, you might as well give her a story.
Exactly. And the dance, there's a lot of dancing, and then we get to the last half hour, which is borderline Hammer as far as skin and lack of and dance. Anyway, it's a lot. It's not for everybody, but if you're in the if you're griping about there's nothing new or original out there and this is a remake, go check this out. It's out on DVD and Blu-ray. I asked Brian and Mon to be here because of the passing of film composer Michel Legrand, who died earlier this week. And five Grammys, 11 nominations, 11 Academy Award nominations, 3 wins. And when I asked you to be on the show, you did a lot of homework in the last few days, and I appreciate that.
I got up the Michel Legrand learning curve pretty quickly. Strangely enough, though, I'm a film buff, a film music buff, though I am. His was kind of a hole in my my film score knowledge, but been working through the greatest hits anyway.
Well, and that's fine. Yeah, I would say your impressions on listening to it, because here was a gentleman who it was trained in jazz and trained in orchestra, and it one of the things that if you listen to the original recordings on a lot of these songs, especially from the late 60s, early 70s, they've been covered numerously by jazz artists and pop artists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little soft rock for a busy world, but we'll get to that.
Well, it's I think he fits neatly in the category of composers and band leaders, if you will, like Nick Nelson Riddle and Henry Mancini and even Marvin Hamlisch. You know, people who worked consistently in the pop jazz milieu.
Very good.
That's just the word that sprang to mind. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Like I said the other day, I just embrace my own pretentiousness.
It's fine.
That's the show.
No, they kind of hang out in that idiom.
I learned to embrace it too.
You know, it was an era when that sort of romantic, lush, orchestral jazz pop was still popular. Got radio airplay. You know, Burt Bacharach. A lot of these, including Burt Bacharach, did film scores because they had the classical chops to do it, and they did quite well. I'm a big fan of Bacharach's work on Butch Cassidy for
absolutely.
For one thing.
By the way, the song's not in the script. Just so folks are clear, William Goldman even goes, "What the hell's this song doing here?" And it's the most memorable thing for a lot of people.
It works. A very lush, romantic jazz sound that pins it to that specific era, that 60s and well into the 70s kind of sound.
So Legrand started in the 50s, obviously, in his native land, and appeared and his work appeared in films like Lola, Cleo from 5 to 7. And then by the mid-60s, really became known here in the States with 1964's The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, a beautiful melodrama musical starring a young Catherine Deneuve. She and her husband, or she and her lover, they're supposed to get together, but he has to go fight in Algeria. And like we mentioned with Cold War, life tracks don't always match up, but it's all done to music. And this was all sung, not in an opera version. So this is 1964. So this was baffling for a lot of people, and it was while we're NPRing cross pollinating. When Terry Gross replayed her interview with Legrand, he talked about, and she brought up the fact that a two person scene is one thing. If it's the two leads that are singing to each other, it's one thing. But creating the dialogue at the mechanic shop. Did you fix? I'm not going to sing. I'm not going to sing in French or English, but the dialogue is: have you parked the car? Have you cleaned it? And that would seem like the more difficult one. It's like I always use a reference when you were playing The Good Doctor, and your hardest lines were "Go on, I'm listening."
So just the kind of things like, where do you get your inspiration to come up with a melody for the mechanic?
I don't know. Not Mike and the Mechanics. That's a different story.
It's a very different story. I was listening to
you wrote me very one. French.
It's so French. It's so very French. She was listening to the lyrics, and I barely speak French, so you pick up things here and there.
It's a beautiful, wonderful film, and it's out on Criterion, and because of that, and sometimes this happens where you've had a film on your desk or room or whatever for a while. I haven't opened it yet. I haven't watched it yet. And because I also bought its counterpart, which was done 3 years later, The Young Girls of Rochefort, also Michel Legrand, also directed by Jacques Demy, with Catherine Deneuve and her real life sister and the dude from West Side Story, and a very funny special appearance by Gene Kelly.
Nice.
That
one I'm totally unfamiliar with.
This is a traditional musical by Sanders. So there is dialogue, and then there's the musical numbers. But it's in a carnival comes to town. You have the twins, sort of twin sisters of Deneuve and her real life sister. They meet boys. They meet guys. There's a scene of the sister dropping her sheet music and going to rush to her aid is Gene Kelly. And it's so the over-the-top swelling of two people crouching down and grabbing the paper at the same – it's lovely. But the opening number is always the kind of orchestrated jazz, Caucasian scat group, choir scat, which, you know, kind of Baccarat, kind of Herb Alpert stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's acceptable. It knows its tone right away and stays light and stays airy for the next 2 hours. It's a lovely, lovely film. sorry, I have my Kathleen Turner voice. Unfortunately, it's Chandler's dad voice, not Body Heat voice. And then my buddy Jeff Marker, I have to credit him with this. When he got to Hollywood, he became what he called the French John Williams, starting with something like Sweet November in 1968. And he won an Academy Award for 1968 for the 19 score for the 1967 film, the original Thomas Crown Affair. And I think we know this song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Windmills of Your Mind. A lot of my introduction to it was Dusty Springfield, but that's also a song that's
been recorded by everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was just listening to the original version of that and thinking, man, you want something that screams 1967? Just get a pop harpsichord.
Well, yeah, actually, you're correct there. Oh, now wait a minute. Now we have the Beatles in my life stuck in the head. That's pretty good. But also. And I think I'm going to be revisiting that film with a bunch of guys, Steve McQueen and Faye Dunaway, and it's Norman Jewison. I was one of the first ones also as far as pop cinema, where you had several screens, several images flashing on the screen at the same time.
Yeah. Jewison was really good with that.
Yeah, some kind of form of kaleidoscope on that. Mm-hmm. And not a bad cinematic chess match, a literal chess match between Steve McQueen and Faye Dunaway.
You know, a good heist movie is always enjoyable, and, you know, when you throw Steve McQueen in.
And that was one that he had to campaign for heavily because nobody believed, studio producers couldn't believe him to be that, play a character that sophisticated. You know, in a suit, playing polo and, you know, driving the cars and doing the heist, absolutely. But it's a fun film. It's a really fun film. And I do like the remake as well. And even when they remade the song with Sting doing the vocals, so that happened.
Yeah, when I was Googling the song, it was like, song by Sting. I'm like, that song is not by Sting.
No, not originally. You're listening to Film Sociology and my coughing here at WFYI, hanging out with Brian and Monica Hartz. So he got nominated for Women of Rochefort in 67, as well as Thomas Crown Affair. Won for Best Music, Original Song. The categories were different back then.
Yes.
1970 was nominated for a song from the film The Happy Ending. That's Gene Simmons' coup de grace with the song What Are You Doing for the Rest of Your Life, which everybody was also covering in 1970. That song has been done to death. In 1971, the film Pieces of Dreams. And then we go to his second Oscar win in 1972 for the 1971 song theme from Summer of 42.
Thank you.
Could be an intimate restaurant. Could be an airport.
And definitely graced any number of those special, you know, romantic LP collections that they sold
yes.
on TV.
That's right. K-Tel. yeah, always a couple walking on the beach at sunset.
Absolutely.
Kind of
yeah.
thing there. Have you seen Summer of 42?
I have. It's been a while.
Robert Mulligan, the gentleman who gave us To Kill a Mockingbird mm-hmm. and introduced to guys Jennifer O'Neill, to which we are eternally grateful.
It's pretty schmaltzy, but
and could not be done today because of a young boy yeah. obsessed with an adult woman. This was the 70s. We hear Monica's eyes rolling now. Yeah, because if you're 14, you're definitely looking at Jennifer O'Neill on the islands. Now, to be fair, 5 years later, they would flip the switch with the film Lifeguard, with a 70s Sam Elliott as a lifeguard.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll show you pictures later. And he has a tryst with a teenage Kathleen Quinlan. They'd made those movies back then. And we'll move on. So
now he's in his 70s, and Monica still thinks he's pretty.
I love
yeah.
it. Well, and that's the other actor. I think they're going to give it to him because he's been around forever. And I loved his response, which was reported in the AV Club. Where it's about effing time.
Yeah.
So
only he probably said the actual.
He did, but we can't. Yeah. So that's
just imagine that in Sam Elliott's voice, and you're good.
Exactly. Other scores he did around this time: Ice Station Zebra, Castle Keep, The Happy Ending we mentioned, Swashbuckler, The Go-Between, Le Mans. He kept Steve McQueen's auto racing movie going. And then in 1971, did music for this TV movie that made it okay for Jocks to cry. Okay, there's some. Any guesses?
Brian's song?
Ding, ding, ding. That's right. Well, the clue was a giveaway.
Was that 71 or was it a little later?
71.
Oh, okay. Because I know that movie is partially credited for the spike in people named Brian born in the 70s, of which I am one. Although my parents swear they did not know anybody named Brian.
You don't have any Bears gear in your home?
No.
Okay.
I do not.
But yeah, I think that film, because soon after you had Bang the Drum Slowly. It was okay mm-hmm. for Jocks to cry because of sport. But it had to be movies about sports.
Well, yeah, you can only cry about the game.
Thank you. Thank
You're
you,
welcome.
Monica.
That's right.
So, yes.
You're allowed to shed a tear for Rudy.
Or Hoosiers. He'll make
yes.
the shot.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, Brian.
You spoiled it.
Oh, stop. You mean that wasn't thrust upon you in the crib when you were born? It's kind of like...
Surprisingly, by a father obsessed with basketball, no.
No?
Yeah.
Cool. It's all right.
It was because he was epically disappointed because I stopped playing basketball in sixth grade and just all of his dreams of me being in the WNBA died.
Getting that 30 cents on the dollar. I'm terrible. I'm just going to be over here.
You are really terrible, but it's true.
I'm sorry. I'm going to move on to.
Well, we have both the movie and the soundtrack on LP. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
Brian's song?
Hoosiers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hoosiers, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very not Brian's.
Not Brian's song.
No,
that's
no.
okay. All right, moving on. So you also did the music for the film version of Portnoy's Complaint, because you need that. Lady Sings the Blues. He did the non-Diana Ross singing stuff. The film version of A Doll's House, 40 Carats, Orson Welles' F for Fake, The Three Musketeers, Gable and Lombard, Ode to Billy Joel, not the song portion, The Other Side of Midnight.
Well, that was That was like the Richard Chamberlain, Michael York, Three Musketeers.
Yes,
yeah?
The 70s version. Yeah, the Oliver Reed one.
That is my very favorite
version. That is, I think, the best version. And, of course, that set the rule because they've made so much footage that they made the Four Musketeers and then the actors sued because they got paid once.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's see, The Mountain Men, The Hunter, of course, Steve McQueen's film. Atlantic City. I love Atlantic City. Have you not seen Atlantic City?
No,
Burt Lancaster, Susan Sarandon. It's one of my favorite crime dramas. Anyway, that Dear Criterion, you should really put out Atlantic City. I'll do the commentary. Nobody's Perfect. He also did film scores for Bolero and Slapstick of Another Kind. And now we go to 1982. He gets another nomination. And this is a song that also features somebody who just passed away recently. This is how we do tie-ins here at Film Sociology. And this film and this song resonates with me.
How do you keep the music playing? How do you make it last? How do you keep the song from fading too fast? How do you lose yourself to someone?
All right, that's James Ingram and Patty Austin doing How Do You Keep the Music Playing from the film Best Friends.
Hmm.
Burt Reynolds, Goldie Hawn. 1982, written by Barry Levinson, directed by Norman Jewison.
Hmm.
And it's kind of underrated on everybody's front.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the listing for it on IMDb right now.
Yeah, it's a...
It's an impressive lineup of talent.
Reynolds and Hawn play a screenwriting couple, and they finally did a longtime couple. Goldie knows about that. And they decide to actually get married. And, of course, things go awry. And then they take a train trip to meet their parents. Her parents are played by Barnard Hughes and Jessica Tandy.
Wow.
His parents are played by Keenan Wynn and Audra Lindley, for you fans of Three's Company. And, yeah, so all of that combined in. And that was a song that I know they used at the end. And I think they used it during. There's another song that Austin and Ingram did together. The other sidebar story was when I was 13, I went to Atlantic. I was in Atlantic City with my parents. We went to Jersey every summer. And I got to see Billy Crystal and Susan Anton co-headline. And if you don't know Susan Anton's a 6-foot blonde Amazon.
Nice.
That's all legs.
I'm a fan already.
I'll show you pictures later. She had a special place in my heart because she was dating Dudley Moore at this time. And I thought, what an inspiration for small guys like me. And anyway, she did that song and I think I passed out. But that's anyway. And we'll wrap up with this and then I want to get to James Ingram for a little bit. But yeah. If I don't do this, Brent and other people from school are going to get on my case about this. I promise I will play this. This was LeGrand's third Oscar.
God, our Heavenly Father. Oh, God. And my Father, who's also in heaven. May the light of this flickering candle illuminate the night the way your spirit illuminates my soul. Papa, can you hear me? Papa, can you see me? Papa, can you find me in the night?
So yeah, Babs.
Yeah.
Babs, can you hear me from Yentl? Mm-hmm. Which I got stink face from the Smarter Two Thirds because I don't own that on disc.
I have a feeling you might soon.
Yeah, probably.
I'm pretty sure I sang that as a state contest song. Like
I bet everybody did in the 80s and 90s. Yeah.
Yeah.
You okay?
I was like, oh yeah, I'm pretty sure I sang that in state competition.
It's definitely is better and better remembered to work from that year because I also note that he also scored that year. Never say never again.
Yeah, I have that headline.
Sean
right
Connery's
here.
Feature-length "Screw You" to the Broccoli Family.
Kinda. It's not Thunderball because it's not yours. Yeah, so
aside from introducing the cinematic world to Kim Basinger, it's best forgotten.
It's fine, you know. But and Barbara Carrera got to be a bad Bond girl.
Yeah, okay.
And because there's the great introduction, he had she's water skis up to him. And he catches her, and he's like, oh, I got you wet. And he said, yeah, but my martini's dry. So that's, come on. That's fun. Yeah, 1983 did that, did Yentl. What else? Burt Reynolds and Kathleen Turner in Switching Channels, if you needed an 80s cable version of His Girl Friday. That was that. The Pickle, we're still on Michelle Legrand, folks. Ready to Wear, the 90s version of Les Mis that had no French people in it. You know, well, then again, the musical doesn't either. And one that cracks me up that I didn't realize he did, because it was a film we watched quite a bit with Emma as a younger Emma, but the film version of Madeline.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
That's Michelle Legrand.
Well, I mean,
also with those French actors, Nigel Hawthorne and Frances McDormand. But but that's a fun one.
Yeah, I bet though that you know if you needed her to do it, Frances McDormand would learn fluent French.
And there's a scene where she's before she starts praying, she's reading The Three Musketeers. So that's always pretty
nice.
And one of Legrand's last credits from last year was the Orson Welles documentary, The Other Side of the mm-hmm. Wind. So. Thank you, Michelle. Merci.
I note that he is, or was, the very same age, born in the same year as both John Williams and Ennio Morricone. So let us say a silent prayer to the film gods to keep both John and Ennio with us a little while longer. And farewell to Michelle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, James Ingram. I bring him up besides his cinematic impact and smooth jams everywhere. He's one of those guys because of... the recordings that he did in the 80s and 90s, he's going to be, you know, there will be a dentist waiting room or, you know, or a doctor's office where you have a soft rock for a busy world. You'll be able to hear him doing stuff like this.
Spending every dime to keep you talking on the line. That's how it was. And all those walks together. Out in any kind of weather, just because there's a brand new way of looking at your life when you know that love is standing by your side.
Baby, come to me. Let me put miles
James Ingram and Patty Austin. Yeah, Baby Come to Me. If
inescapable in the 80s.
Yeah, and it was used constantly at that time. I think it was General Hospital, one of my mom's stories.
Nice.
Gotta go, Mary. My stories are on. And I think this was also the same era they lured Elizabeth Taylor to appear on that show because they handed her a big wad of cash. But anyway, that song.
Why wouldn't you?
That song is being played somewhere on the planet
right now.
And it was being played right here.
There you go. Well, not just me, but his work appeared in a few films. Well, actually, looking at the filmography of the soundtrack on IMDb, 52 credits, and he received
48 of those were just for that song.
Right. Exactly. Well, you kind of. That's how I didn't want to get into that. But received 2 Oscar nominations for 2 songs. I have no idea what they are. But for the song "The Day I Fall in Love." From Beethoven's Second.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Oh, no.
Someone got paid.
A year later, got another nomination for the song Look What Love Has Done from Junior.
Wow.
Right? I just played that. I just played How Do You... Well, now, granted, he didn't write. He just sang on How Do You Keep the Music Playing. Yeah. So the other thing that...
Beethoven's Second.
yes, you can now say Academy Award nominated film, Beethoven. It's amazing what makeup and music will get a nomination for a film.
And just to hear people solemnly announcing the names of those films is worth it.
Yes. But, the other one, and here's one that is also being played somewhere in the world right now, and it did not get nominated in 1986. Somewhere Out There from An American Tale.
I love that song.
His duet with Linda
Ronstadt.
Speaking of things we sang in school, we sang that in my
yes.
school choir
when I was
a wee lad. Well, I was never a wee lad, but I was a lad.
Yes.
A young one.
You were born tall.
I love that song.
See? So there is that. He also did a song in City Slickers, which I just revisited, and I can't remember what the song is. But the other thing that he should be remembered for, because I'm bringing it up here, because I am of a certain age, one of his songs, and it's another song that's being played somewhere in the world right now, the song Just Once. This was used at the end of the 1982 horny teenager film, The Last American Virgin.
Huh.
Now, this was, there was a glut of those in the late 70s, early 80s. I know, I watched them. And this was one that was a cable staple.
Like Porky's.
Yeah, kind of like Porky's. And the thing about this one is, it's written and directed by Boaz Davidson, the Israeli filmmaker, who you also can see, and this film was also talked about in the documentary Electric Boogaloo, the story of Canon Films,
oh, nice.
Which I highly, highly recommend. And it's a group of young boys trying to do what young boys want to do. And the first three quarters of it is that, and then it gets fairly serious in the last quarter. The shy one of the group, who has strong feelings for the new exchange student and is the target of everybody, the girl is pregnant and he helps her with the money to get an abortion, and then there's recovery and they bond, and then she goes back to the other guy who got her pregnant in the first place.
What year was it?
1982.
Okay.
And I remember seeing that because you don't expect a chest kick at the end of a horny teenager movie.
No.
And this film did that.
Kudos for that choice.
With this.
I did my best, but I guess my best wasn't good enough. Here we are back where we were before.
Walks in. I remember he opens up the kitchen swinging doors, and there she is kissing the other guy.
Oh, man.
And then he just walks. He bought her jewelry. And then he just walks back to his car, and it's him driving, close up, tear falling, credits rolling. While he's still, it's not a fade. Eventually they fade out, but there was that moment watching this of WTF!
Yeah.
Are you serious?
That's a...
So, I guess I'm recommending The Last Quarter of The Last American Virgin, but yeah, that was kind of blindsided.
It's like somebody wanted to make that serious movie all along, but they're like, no, we gotta do the sex comedy.
It went through like 10 rewrites, and then that last half is like all that's left of the original script.
Well,
we're gonna go with that.
Well, and it is it's a remake of Davidson's own film, which was called Eskimo Limon, known in the United States as Lemon Popsicle.
Hmm.
All right.
Single entendre. So, but yeah, that was, anyway, I always remembered that, and it's out there. So thank you, James Ingram. Thank you much.
Any of his stuff bluesy enough to make it onto the house party?
No, okay. I can't. Not quite. Kinda. That's why I'm doing it here.
That
so
I think it was so interesting is like everything we've listened to is every clip you've played, it's all so clearly idiosyncratic of its time. Like you're like,
oh yeah, that
came out in the 70s. Oh yeah, that came out like the 1980s.
Yes,
like,
it does.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Shifting gears a little bit, you're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. The Hartzes are hanging out.
Hello.
Yo. What did you guys watch during the big snow in? Did you guys watch? Now, actually, I just like to start. There was a big moment at the Hartz household.
Oh, yeah. So we took our daughter to her first movie in the theater. So she's 4 and a half, and we had been really choosy about like what we wanted to take her to the theater to see.
Well, you should.
Yeah, I mean, she's well into the Disney canon at home.
Yeah. But we found out that Wizard of Oz was coming from Fathom Events out on the west side, and so we took her to see that on Sunday. And one of the things we do with especially movies like, with The Wizard of Oz, there are a few scary moments. You have the cyclone and the flying monkeys. And so one of the things we
Maggie
do
Maggie Hamilton.
Yes. She actually, surprisingly, the least scary thing to BB, I think.
Okay.
What we tend to do in those moments is, we'll kind of introduce her to the music first and give her context. So, for the week leading up to the movie, I would play the soundtrack for her. And she would ask me, Mommy, what's happening now? What's happening now? And I would kind of lay
When I hear the Miss Gulch theme, I think of Brent Marty dressed as Miss Gulch. So, but I don't think BB's ready for that.
No. No, probably not. But it was a really good experience. She was really excited. Although there was a funny moment where two-thirds of the way through the movie, she's sitting on my lap and she just leans over to me and she's like, Mommy, can I watch something on your phone? And I was like, Bebe, we're watching something on the screen right now. I was like, this is what we're watching. She's good. Like, I want to watch an episode of She-Ra. I'm like, no. We're finishing The Wizard of
Oz. By the way, she watched She-Ra last time we had lunch. So.
Yes, she did. Yeah. But she was so, I think the best part, though, was after the Wicked Witch gets drenched and she melts to the ground, dead silence in the theater, and Bebe just goes, the Wicked Witch died.
Yes,
and everybody
yes, she did.
Thought it was so funny.
No, was that her first time with that? Was that the first time with the Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, she'd never seen it before. Yeah,
how did that happen? Well, she has her own ideas of watching stuff, I guess.
She Very does, so. And personally, I grew up really afraid of tornadoes, so I didn't want to introduce her to that because the cyclone in that scene can be pretty, intense if you don't really understand that it's pretend. And
if there's a pickup truck with Bill Paxton, Helen Hunt, and
yeah, well, that's for later. That's for later. Yeah, well, and okay. When we have to tell her that, yes, that's Cary Elwes. No, he's not his best role.
Emma also likes Cary Elwes. I have yet to bring up Twister.
Yeah, no, yeah. Twister is, that movie.
It's kind of Smokey and the Bandit with tornadoes.
That's
So anyway, so tornadoes flip you off.
Tornadoes used to scare me. So I was a little cautious about showing her
She did charm some free popcorn out of the.
She did. Oh my gosh! So she walked up to the concession stand, and I was trying to decide because they had three kinds of popcorn. Apparently, they had the Chicago mix and your standard movie popcorn.
Blue collar popcorn.
I was blown away, and then but BB was like, I want some popcorn, and so the worker was asking her some questions, and Bebe got really excited. She was jumping up and down. She's like, I get to see the Wizard of Oz. And so then they handed me my big $18 bowl of popcorn. And then they were just like, here, have some popcorn. She was like, oh, is this for me? Oh my, it was so cute. I was like, if I didn't know you weren't playing this for effect, I would that you're not doing that. I would totally think that she was playing that concession person.
First one's always free, kid.
Right. But she was charming and wonderful, and
so except for the She-Ra episode, but did she sit with you the whole time?
No, she
did. She go back and forth.
She made it about halfway through the movie in her own seat, and then she promptly climbed into my lap and just wouldn't move. So. Right.
But her verdict immediately after the film was over was, that was beautiful.
Yes.
Yay!
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And then the Wicked Witch really wanted those slippers.
Yes. Yes, she did.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. The first time out, that's fantastic.
Yeah, once we kind of hit that point, we're like, I guess her first trip out has to be really special. So now, when we take her to the theater for this first time, we've got to up the ante. So, we've got to really.
Have.
Well, yeah. I mean, Broadway. I think her first Broadway show is going to be Hamilton.
It's going to be what?
Hamilton.
Oh. Not my choice, but that's okay. It's not my kid.
Oh, it's only because
I'm kidding.
It's only because listening to her rap Hamilton lyrics is amazing.
Actually,
Into the Woods.
Next week is Into the Woods Junior at Richmond Civic with a certain someone as the baker's wife.
Yes, awesome. I know. That's so awesome.
But yeah, I've heard.
Hi,
her.
Emma.
Yes. Hi, Emma.
Break a leg. Don't bring up Emily Blunt to her. But yeah, anyway, I heard BB's rap as the witch.
Oh, BB's impersonation of Bernadette Peters is just
so funny,
amazing.
So I, my Emma's first cinematic experience, and it was, gosh, it was not nearly as good as that. And it was for work purposes with me. But well, it's just like, all right, I gotta go review this. So come on, kid. But she was four, and it was the film Racing Stripes.
Oh.
This was the zebra who thought it was a racehorse.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And, God, was it Zac Efron? No, Frankie Muniz. Frankie Muniz is the voice.
Yeah.
Dustin Hoffman, Whoopi Goldberg, the girl from Heroes was the live-action girl. But, yeah, kind of the same way. She was in their chair, and then she'd come out, sit on me, and then be in the chair and sit with me. And about two-thirds of the way movie, is this over?
Yeah.
She really liked it, and well, you know, eventually I had to go buy it, and... there will be a time that your BB will want to watch something, and you have the right as a parent, just like no,
yeah,
or just go. I think that movie's gone. I conned Emma out of Shark Tale. I want to see that movie, Daddy. I don't think it's here anymore. Moving on to next week. So
BB has, unfortunately, she has like this just wicked sharp memory, and she remembers everything. So she'll be like, no, I think it's over here, and then she'll go find it. And
what about that ice cream I wanted before I got sick?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yep. Very much so. Basically.
So, well, congratulations. That's very, very cool.
It was really fun. And, like, it was nice, too, because, we, you know, Somewhere Over the Rainbow is one of her lullabies. So,
aww,
like, her getting to hear the original version was just really cool, too.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, and not that they need the plug, but those Fathom Events TCM screenings
they're
are
great.
Always,
yeah,
always
they're,
fun.
Yeah.
Is there they've got a great lineup this year.
What do they have? Do you know?
Oh, then next month they're doing My Fair Lady. They're also doing Gone with the Wind this year.
They're doing
Kobe and Bianca.
Yeah, they're doing Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, you're there.
We're like already
you're
like
so
yes.
There.
So yeah, go.
We've
check
done
it out.
That once before, actually.
I mean, it's exactly like watching a movie on Turner Classic Movies. It's even got the intro with Ben Mankiewicz. It's just in a theater.
Nice.
Yep.
Let's see what we got here. Now that you brought it up, so I bring it up.
But please do go see Casablanca at the Art Craft.
Yeah, it's
as
pretty
well.
Good.
It's never not fun.
Oh, here we go. February. Well, yeah, for Saturday the 2nd, Carmen, Wizard of Oz, 80th anniversary, the 3rd and the 5th. Carmen on the 6th. The anime film I Want to Eat Your Pancreas on the 7th. other titles of note: Dirty Dancing, February 10th. My Fair Lady, February 17th. And 20th, and yeah, Gone with the Wind on Thursday the 28th. So that's just some of the Fathom events happening over there.
Yeah.
So how often do you guys get to watch stuff as a couple, especially with BB in the house?
So it's actually kind of how we unwind every day. So like right now we're working our way through Game of Thrones because we're prepping for season 8. So we haven't watched a movie in a while.
Right.
We've just been like, you know, binging. I say binging. It's like long-term binging. It's usually just one or two episodes at a time.
Sure.
Because when 10:30 rolls around, you're like, oh, I have a small child and a full-time job, and it's time to go to bed.
That's. I mean, Lynn and Emma are like that with Gilmore Girls. Now that I'm like, wait, aren't you guys caught up? No, that's fine.
No.
Now, to be fair, I this also tickles me. You show Emma, you show BB certain scenes from Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Yeah. No. Because I'm going to back you on this, sister. Because I would show Emma episodes of South Park that didn't involve body parts or bodily fluids and functions.
Yeah.
So, like, the very first one was Kyle coaching the Pee Wee hockey team, which, you know, a knockoff of the Mighty Ducks and every kid's sports film ever made. So, no, I'm with you.
Yeah.
She likes the dragons.
She loves the dragons.
Of course she does.
Yeah, and
How to Tame Your Dragon with Blood and Genitals.
We tried to get her
to watch How to Train
Your Dragon the other day, and she was not interested.
Holding up the I'm not interested sign.
Yeah.
We'll get her there.
Yeah. But no, it's fun too because she that's actually one of the ways she really got into classical music and soundtracks is I was describing I was playing the season 6 soundtrack to Game of Thrones in my car one day, and she just asked me what's happening, and I told her and then subsequently showed her Daenerys flying her dragons over Meereen.
Right.
So
that's fine.
Yeah. She doesn't know what happens to Viserion yet.
And that's your job.
Yeah, so I know.
You'll explain that
later.
To her. Anyway, so you're catching up and getting ready for season 8.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
And we're also working through the Marvel movies, because we have a few to catch up on.
Yeah, yet. And so we did our annual viewing of Dr. Zhivago as well.
Your annual. Is there a date?
We wait for when it's cold and snowy.
Naturally. We used to do the other way, like in the coldest day in college is when we would crank out the Jimmy Buffett albums and grill lobsters and the floral shirts.
That's also legit. I did have the seafood last night. So.
You did have seafood delivered to you. So I did. That was pretty good. Yeah, there was a thing of I think I'm buckling as a parent because, well, and I know the Hartz family is with me on this, and like Chris Lloyd and a few others, that unless you own the disc, you don't actually own the film.
True.
And yes.
Netflix and Hulu can just snatch it away from you at any given time. So I think I'll have to admit this to my family. I finally just stopped with, because I will go upstairs and Lynn will be watching a movie on TNT, edited with commercials, and I'll go, it's downstairs. And then she'll go, I don't want to go downstairs.
He does that to me when I'm watching something on like Hulu or Netflix. He's like,
really?
You know,
it's
we have it. It's 3 feet away.
Dad, there's so much. That's another day. I get So I guess the menu screen for Hulu or Netflix is smaller than the basement. Okay. All right.
It's just not as much to process all at once.
Thanks, Emma.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Lynn.
Jeez. I'm just here to support them.
Here's a cookie. Pat on the head. Go over there. See, it's all the ladies in my life. Anyway, but we were. It was one of those. We were all at dinner, and Emma flipped through, and she, on her own choice, she picked The Truman Show.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's
it. Was
awesome.
Really cool.
I love that movie.
It's one of those. You know, it's like I haven't told her. We have the imaginary list, and they're like, that's on the list, you know. And yeah, I believe that's her introduction to Peter Weir. That's not bad at all.
No.
I think we traded a remark or two about this on Facebook. Has Peter Weir ever made a bad movie? I don't think so. Now, there's a couple I haven't seen, but.
Well, let's see. Because I remember him from the very first thing I saw, as did a lot of people, was Gallipoli in 1981 with a very young Mel Gibson. But, yeah, prior to that, The Last Wave, Picnic at Hanging Rock that he's best known for. That's a Criterion favorite. Here you go. Here's from The Last Wave, Gallipoli, Year of Living Dangerously, Witness, The Mosquito Coast. I got tired of The Mosquito Coast two-thirds of the way through. It felt like Christmas Vacation. It felt like National Lampoon's Vacation, but written by Paul Schrader. Dead Poets Society, Green Card, Fearless, Truman Show, Master and Commander, and The Way Back.
Mm-hmm.
God, that was 2010.
Yeah.
That's his last film.
I know.
Nominated for 6 Oscars. Yeah. No, this was not her first Peter Weir film. That's Dead Poets. So,
oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, he's got a pretty extraordinary track record.
Hitting for average.
What I remember about The Truman Show for me is like, because I grew up and I remember seeing The Mask when I was really young.
Ooh.
And
then you were blindsided because he had to act.
Well, but that was like the first time I ever really explicitly understood the power of like and that people can make that shift from you know, something so absolutely absurd to the level of sincerity that he displayed in The Truman Show. And it really opened my brain up to like what a powerful actor and what a powerful story can do to somebody that you might have only known in like a specific kind of role. Among other things, that was the biggest thing I took from that movie.
An example of making the jump from comedic acting to quote unquote serious acting. Mm-hmm. And you can use your comedic chops if they're channeled in the right way. I had that experience being directed by Emma in January with Falling. Because it was a play about a family dealing with the oldest son with autism and the dad. Dad is not the organized one. Dad is not does not carry the heavy load as far as how to handle the son. He uses humor as a defense mechanism. Yeah, it cuts to the bone. And but there's a couple moments. So early on, we did. He has a ritual before school starts where he wants to do the big bad wolf, and Dad plays the wolf. So early rehearsals, I would just do different voices:
mm-hmm.
James Mason, Christoph Waltz, John Wayne. No, I'm not doing those here. But occasionally look at Emma and say, you got any requests? And I think she said Don Draper once. And I said, I know how you feel about Don Draper. No. I'm not doing that. I'll do that if Mom's Joan. She's like, shut up, Dad. So anyway. But
what did Emma end up thinking of it?
She liked it. Okay. She really liked it. And it was fascinating because, you know, she's grown up. I mean, reality television has been a part of her life since the get-go. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's 21 years old and still relevant.
Yeah.
Still.
It's arguably
such
more.
A good movie.
Mm-hmm. Cue, yeah. I might like Cue the Sun.
Yep. Yeah, Ed Harris. Let's see.
So,
yeah. Well, Laura Linney in that movie, too. Just,
well,
she's
in any
so
movie.
Good.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was fun. I was really glad she picked that. And, of course,
good job, Emma.
I let my thing get the best of me. Where I'm like, okay, now you got to watch Network. Okay, Dad, I know you mentioned it. Yes, I know. I can't. dads will go to the well one too many times for suggestions. Just giving you a heads up, Brian. There was the moment of Emma inherits Dad's clothes. We're currently, actually this week, one of the projects we had at the house was what sweaters don't fit me anymore that will fit you. So that's been very productive and beneficial for her. But we did this with shirts, with T-shirts a few years back. And I had from my college days a black Allman Brothers shirt. And it caught her eye. And it's got black with the Allman Brothers mushroom and... You know, oh, that's kind of cool looking. Can I have that? And I said, sure. And I'm going to wear it to school tomorrow. Okay. And then, you know, like a teacher, she got some positive feedback from a couple teachers and a couple students. And then, you know, she told me this and I'm finally like, do you want to listen to Live at the Fillmore? No, Dad, I don't. I just want to wear the shirt.
I'm like,
okay.
Don't break my heart.
And then I was like, and I said, I'll not talk about concert t-shirt etiquette. It's like, no, Dad. I went, okay, times have changed. That's fine. That's okay.
That's okay.
It just happens. So, also, shifting gears a little bit, I want to talk about some of the films that I had to catch up with. This is First World Problems, as you know, when the award screeners come.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And watching stuff in the privacy of the home. And then stuff from Film Movement being sent to me and Shout Factory. Thank you. So finally catching up on these, and it's fun because most of the time, this is one of the few times where I'm able to watch whatever's at the bottom of the or top of the pile. That's what I'm watching.
Mm-hmm.
I had to stop doing that when Lynn came home and Emma was two, and I was watching The Exorcist. So Emma was not in the room, and it was not even a crucial, memorable scene. She just recognized it and took Emma and went upstairs. Fine. So Emma was in the kitchen. With her little play saucer, it was okay. Anyway, but there's also certain things like when Lynn and Emma were gone. I think, Brian, you and I have talked about this on the show before. What do we watch when the smarter two-thirds are gone?
Yep.
Because they will be either something definitely not of interest to either one of you and probably of a darker nature. Case in point. The last time, it was the week it came out on video, but both parts of Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac, I watched both of those back to back.
That movie.
I don't recommend
man,
that. Did you
that
watch?
Yeah. I've seen
both
the whole
of
thing.
Them?
Yeah. That movie is, whew.
Yeah. And she works with him a lot.
Yeah.
I hope she's okay.
I hope they all are.
Well, I kind of do. And I've yet to get to the house that Jack built yet.
Yeah. No,
it's just not something Lars von Trier does.
No.
Right. It's either one way or another. It's a polarizing opinion of Mr. von Trier's work. With that in mind, I got from Film Movement Classics three films from director Joseph Sarno. This was a retrospect series, and I've received a couple of these before. One is from 1964 called Sin in the Suburbs. And then the other one after that, also from 64, called Warm Nights and Hot Pleasures. And then from 1974, the film Confessions of a Young American Housewife. Okay. I bring up the 60s ones first because these are also associated with, if you remember the video company Something Weird, This is the kind of low-budget exploitation, avant-garde exploitation, drive-in fare. Mm-hmm. I believe there was also a show Sandra Bernhardt used to host on the weekends that would kind of highlight some of these films. And these are these are some kind of sexploitation films from the 60s. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are not talking about porn. I'm going to word this carefully while we go through these pictures. These are sexploitation films in the 60s. These were not rated. And this was the one sin in the suburbs. There's a series of housewives, and the most you're going to see is a bare back when a brassiere is removed. I'll put it that way. You know, and the lingerie is more than what you see on the beach, that kind of stuff.
Well, but, at that time, depending on the year, that was still when the production code was in effect, so they had to dance around some requirements.
Yeah, literally and figuratively. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's not rated. It did not play at your neighborhood. I mean, these were kind of the downtown movie theater kind of places. You know, acting is slightly better than the adult cinema fare. Shooting-wise, slightly above the adult cinema fare. Just doesn't have the adult cinema. Anyway. But you have a series of housewives that one's having an affair with a furniture bill collector, another with her daughter's teenage classmate, and
wow,
yeah. But and by twisting, they do that generic '60s Mystery Science Theater twist dancing and generic music to go with it. There's a lot of this, and then like the daughter walking in on the mom, but this film is also known because there's a couple in this neighborhood in generic suburbs USA that they don't have a brothel, but they open up their house to a members only gathering with hoods and masks. This I don't know when or if Stanley Kubrick saw this film, but yeah, you could say that the early origins of Eyes Wide Shut could have happened from Joseph Sarno's Sin in the Suburbs.
Wow.
From 1964, black and white. 90 minutes could have been 20 minutes shorter at
19th
least.
19th century Swiss playwright plus 60s exploitation film. I mean, it's Kubrick. He watched everything.
Yeah. So, yeah. See, we're getting back to the...
There you go.
So the other one was Warm Nights and Hot Pleasures, also from 1964, at the aptly run 69 minutes, of three college girls who get into the seedy show business world in New York City. You know, where talent agents tell you to take your clothes off, see if you're qualified. That's an actual line. And you're invited to a company party as arm or leg candy or whatever. So... the landlady for the girl's apartment is also doing a topless photo shoot at the time that she's met. So this kind of seedy side of show business. One of the young party goers, I recognize it's a young Joe Santos, best known. He was a 70s that guy, best known as Lieutenant Becker from the Rockford Files. So that guy. But yeah, a lot of, as I wrote in my notes, 60s underwear. Yeah, a lot of that. So,
bullet bras?
Yeah, kind of like that. And a boyfriend that tries to talk one of the girlfriends into doing more things with the agent to get her forward in the business. So,
of course.
Yeah, kind of scuzzy show business drama from the 60s. I bring those, so that's both 1964. I'm sure it took days to shoot. and then we get to 1974 with the film Confessions of a Young American Housewife. We have two couples that have a very open relationship, and then one of the ladies' mother comes to live with them for a while. So we joke about these ages, and I actually wound up looking up the actors who were involved in this opus. But the mom is, and of course, the mom is very conservative. She was the housewife of the year in her small hometown, and we know she's conservative because her hair is pulled back.
Visual cues.
That's right. That's like in Shakespeare. If you're wearing a cap, you're a dude.
Yes.
No matter what gender.
No matter what.
But the mom is 37. The actress is 37, and the daughter is 22. So it's feasible. It's not like, and I love the gang at IRT. Like, it's not. Angela Lansbury being 9 when she had Lawrence Harvey and Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
or my lovely wife, who apparently Mrs. Cratchit was 9 when she had Martha the last time Lynn played it.
And Eileen Hurley, who played Gertrude in Olivier's Hamlet, was younger than Laurence Olivier.
Was Cary Grant's mom in North by Northwest. Yes. So, yes, we love cinematic gene pools. But this one could actually happen. So mom kind of...
I'm glad you did that research to confirm their dedication to authenticity.
Absolutely. This is, again, film sociology, soft, borderline softcore, your pledge dollars at work. So, but yeah, mom starts to open up a little bit. Now, I bring this up because the, as I wrote, yeah, more softcore than sexploitation because it's 1974. So, parts are seen, action is happening, but not seen. That's pretty vague. Also, lots of walking and talking in this film. Way, a lot of that. But, I mean, it's also competing with the movie, you know, the hardcore rated X movies and triple and doubles and quadruples of that time. So, and it's also, thankfully, only 73 minutes long. So, anyway, that's out there. Thank you, Film Movement Classics, for sending me those.
Those going on the shelf or in a drawer?
No, I'll keep them up there. No, they've said. No, I don't know. I don't do that. We shift gears, and this was one I know they were sending it to me. I think they sent me this in November, so I apologize for getting to this. But do you know from 1960, and Paramount put this out, and there's three of these. Are you familiar with the Sissy films?
No.
Sissy films? Mm-hmm. With Romy Schneider? She is, and this apparently, and on the back of the DVD box, it's referred to as a holiday television favorite. And I said to Lynn, do you know this? She's like, no, I've never heard of this. Huh. But it's an Austrian emperor who courts and marries, his cousin. But
As you do
in Austria.
Oh, those crazy Habsburgs.
Yeah, but it's one of those where, you know, love and the state clash. And I see sort of in a way, but she's not very empress-like. She doesn't act, you know, maybe she needs a nanny like Julie Andrews.
So basically it's like a Hallmark movie. Before
or the
Hallmark
Prince
movies.
And Me or Princess Diaries.
Yeah. Hey, Princess Diaries was good.
Okay. No, I'm just saying this is, but I've never heard of this. And mm-hmm. I know Romy Schneider's work, but and they made three of these, I believe. So and some of it shot on location. So you got some nice mountain
ooh,
work there.
Nice.
But yeah, I've not heard of these. Also from Film Movement, the final part of the gangster trilogy from Beat Takeshi, Outrage Coda. And it's one where there's more of a war of words than bullets. And Takeshi's character, a former Yakuza boss, now because of what happened in the last film, is kind of in exile in Korea. But when some Yakuza's visiting, do some bad things. And there has to be payment and respect, and otherwise things go wrong. And it's, you know, if you know the Yakuza films, and even this film, The Yakuza with Robert Mitchum, you know, a lot of tales of betrayal and code, serious code stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fingers are lost if you do things wrong in this world. But Beat Takeshi, you know, is a comedic actor who's also made some seriously hardcore gangster films. Not just by Asian standards, but by standards as well. Anyway,
been meaning to check some of this.
Yeah,
stuff.
You really should. It's really solid stuff. Also, from Film Movement, the aptly titled An Afghan Love Story. Thankfully, 82 minutes of what happens when a waiter and a budding female law student get together and she gets pregnant.
Mm.
Now, that's a sticky situation here in the States. But not when the father thinks you've ruined the family image and is beaten with a belt and locked in a closet.
Oh.
And you know, our life is cursed, and the lawyer is telling the dad, we live in an outdated society. You got to do something about this, about getting her out. So, just a reminder.
Sounds nice and fluffy.
Yeah. Also, the documentary Kobe, not about Mr. Slagle, but it's a really. Opens itself up, and it's a documentary of a teenage girl transforming into a boy in small town Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of video diaries from the young person and his lover. We get interviews with the family, and that's really about it. It's fairly short. There's one scene where they go on location. We do not have the small town, and the stereotypes that go with that are not a part of this. Mm-hmm. And it's more about his and his love's dealing with the transformation. Mm-hmm. Of very informative and open, borderline self, video selfie as far as look at me, but I'm not one to say. So, but that is out there. And then finally, I finished this last night. Pardon my Spanish. Un traductor. Set in Havana, we have a University of Havana Russian literature professor. This is right after the fall of Chernobyl, and he's all of the college studies have been suspended, and he gets a job translating to Russian child patients affected by Chernobyl. Mm-hmm. So he gets more and more engulfed with the kids. Helps them draw pictures, tell stories. Of course, there's the obligatory. He forgets about his wife and child as Havana is changing in the mm-hmm. late 80s. And as I find out afterwards, and there's a postscript. It's based on a true story, and this was directed by this film subject's actual two sons.
What was it called? So,
Un Traductor, which I believe is the translator.
Okay.
In Spanish. Traductor.
Yeah, got it.
That was
traductor.
Traductor. Thank you. Repiten ustedes. So there we go. So that's quite a bit of territory here. Picking up Nuvo, just marking your calendars. February 17th. That's a Sunday from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at the Buskirk Chumley Theater in Bloomington is the Wild and Scenic Film Festival, where activism gets inspired. And I was going through. I didn't. Oh, and Thursday, February 7th, at the Murad, Old National Center, a screening of High Fidelity with a Q&A from John Cusack.
Wow.
Well, they're paying him enough, so
yes.
I guess he'll answer all of your questions. Good luck. I hope that goes well. And there was one other thing that was in here, and yes, I'm turning pages on the radio.
Well, they're also on Friday. There's the screening of Wrath of Khan with William Shatner.
Yes.
Oh, at the Murad as well.
That's
Thank
right.
you for telling me that. That's good.
Next Friday, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
We're going to that.
Yes.
Are
we
you
are.
Really?
We have tickets. Yes.
Okay. I might need to call you in and get a report on that.
Sounds good.
That would be great.
So, what color are you painting yourself, Monica?
What color do you want me to paint myself?
No, it's really what color does Bill want you to paint?
Green, obviously.
Obviously. So, this was an ad. April 14th at the Murat Theater, The Empire Strips Back, a burlesque parody.
Wow.
Yep. So, 18 and over.
Which company is doing that?
Let's see.
I think it's a touring.
It's a touring
show,
company.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a touring one. Yeah,
They've done one or two others, I think.
You've heard of these, though?
I have heard of a previous touring Star Wars related burlesque show.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This is nothing like the Orlando strip club doing Macbeth. that was an actual thing. So, well, cool. You guys doing all right?
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm just curious as to if there was an Orlando strip club doing Macbeth, did they call it Macbeth or did they call it the Scottish play?
They called it Macbeth.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not superstitious. Well, you really shouldn't be if you're removing your clothes.
No, probably not.
Probably not, yeah.
Out damn spot takes on a weird
whole different.
Wow.
Yeah, that's rubbing a different kind. Okay. Ladies.
Oh, man.
Oh, I got a little
plug please.
To
plug away.
In here, working on something that's opening on March 1st. So, we got a month yet.
Yes.
At the Phoenix Theater. The Hotel Nepenthe.
Yes, how is that
I'm doing the sound design for that show, it's going to be a really fun show. It's the playwright describes it as a schizophrenic noir. The lives of a bunch of people intersecting in and around the titular mysterious hotel. Working on sound for this is going to be really spooky and interesting. And we brought on board a fabulous local composer named Jordan Munson to do an original score.
Oh,
as well.
I'm so excited about this!
Yeah, it's gonna look and sound pretty great, pretty fabulous, mysterious.
Cool. I was at the Phoenix last weekend for Apples in Winter.
So, I've heard very good things about that.
Very good stuff there.
Yeah.
So, go check out some local theater, folks, in between movies.
Yes. We also need to raise a hat and pay it and tap a glass or do both to actor Dick Miller, who died at 90. Here's a guy, classic, that guy, constantly working.
Yep.
Credits go all the way back to 1955. And wow. I believe the headlines had him listed as Gremlins actor. Is that true?
They mainly mentioned Gremlins and the Terminator.
Yep.
But the people who were casting him in that, like James Cameron and Joe Dante, knew him from his earlier work because
he was one of
did a lot of Roger Corman.
One of the Roger Corman players.
And, you know, of course, Cameron worked with Roger Corman too. And did Joe Dante as well?
I believe he was under the tutelage as well. So going back to 1955, I am not going through all of the credits, but, you know, titles that we should look for like Apache Woman, Naked Paradise, Rock. Hi, Monica. Rock All Night, Sorority Girl. This is not the films we were talking about earlier. War of the Satellites, The Roaring Twenties TV. He did a lot of TV as well. The Terror, X, The Man with the X-Ray Eyes. Little Shop of Horrors, he was in that.
Yeah.
We'll get to Bucket of Blood in a little bit. Ski Party, Beach Ball, Wild Wild Winter, The Wild Angels. The Trip, of course, The Wild Racers. Now we get into the 70s. Night Call Nurses, The Student Teachers. Yeah, this stuff we sort of talked about. Executive Action, The Slams, Big Bad Mama, Truck Turner, Capone, Death Race 2000, White Line Fever, Crazy Mom. All the stuff that's on the Corman stuff on video. Mr. Billion.
Classics.
But then he gets a bit as the Palm Club owner in Martin Scorsese's New York, New York, who also worked under him. Corvette Summer, I Want to Hold Your Hand, Piranha, Rock and Roll High School, Lady in Red, 1941, Used Cars, so working with Spielberg and Zemeckis.
Yep.
The Howling, lots of stuff. Project X, played a vendor in Star Trek The Next Generation, of course he did. Gremlins 2 and Gremlins we talked about, The Burbs, Ghost Rider. I mean, just a recognizable guy. Oh, After Hours, he had a bit in After Hours. His last credit is Rabbi Walter Paisley in Hanukkah, which has just been completed, so good timing there. But yeah, one of these just kind of recognizable faces could do one or two days worth of work and then move on and do like, you know, 9 credits in a single year.
Yep.
Wow.
So thank you, Dick Miller. Appreciate
one of those,
it.
One of those careers an actor can only dream of.
Yep. And I mentioned A Bucket of Blood, and this is one he actually starred in. This was a Corman production and directed, and Corman didn't want to do a straight ahead horror film, so this was a horror film set in the beatnik era of New York in the 50s, where he. Dick Miller's character, Walter Paisley, is kind of lampooned as the next big artist. He's kind of mocked by the serious beret-wearing, cappuccino-sipping artists. And he winds up making a series of mannequins that turns out to be actually people. So I think Tourist Trap owns a great deal of debt to A Bucket of Blood.
Well, not to mention the original... Wax Museum. I don't know.
Wax Museum.
Which came
Fiend
first.
Without a Fiend with a Face, maybe kind of like that as well.
But, no, House of Wax, not Wax Museum. With Vincent Price.
Vincent Price. There you go.
In 3D.
That's right. And 3D Charles Bronson. but yeah, $50,000, 5-day shooting, and I love the fact that it says on Wikipedia, Corman accepted the challenge. It was not a production; it was a challenge, kind of like Little Shop. Like, yeah, I can make a horror film in 2 days or what have you. So. But yeah, he actually starred in that one. So I know I have it from the MGM Midnight Movie series, if you go online and look for them. Or, you know, go through your local book and movie stores that are still out there and look for those. But yeah, Dick Miller, yeah, pretty cool career. Like that a lot. All right, now where were we? Oh, yes, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Alan Breed is people!
Zardoz! Has spoken.
Adjust your red diapers. Thanks, Monica. Thanks, Brian, for hanging out.
Thanks for having us.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you've let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!